Hello, this is Phoebe Preston and Maggie Lorenz interviewing Dr. Ramsey, Dean of Barrett at the West Campus, on Friday, December 13th, 2018, at 10:57 a.m. in the West Campus Barrett Suite. This interview is part of the Barrett Oral History Project. Our goal of this project is to preserve a record of Barrett's history in honor of our 30th anniversary. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us and share your experience.
My pleasure.
So, I know that you came to ASU at the West Campus in 1994, but how did you get involved with Barrett and what was that process like?
I became involved with the Honors College immediately in 1994 because there wasn't yet honors at the West Campus, and so we needed a liaison to the Tempe Honors College. And the person with whom I met biweekly was Michael Cochise Young, the late Michael Cochise Young. So she would come and we would have coffee and talk about the kinds of ways to get honors to the West Campus. I would visit Tempe and then Dean Humphreys to talk about these things. And that lasted from 94 to 96. And then in 96, I became a de facto but unofficial affiliated faculty of honors. Mm-hmm. And I taught a number of honors special topics courses at the request of the person they appointed as the director of honors here, who was Joseph Ryan.
That's awesome.
And that version of the honors program here, I think it was still called a program then, took place in FAB on the first floor near the College of Mary Lou Fulton. It was the College of Ed then. That's where Dr. Ryan was a professor and dean. Just two little rooms. In fact,
how much staff was on the Barrett team at that time?
There was a wonderful staff person. She helped me order my books and set up this, and her name was Julie something. I'll have to look up.
So a handful of people involved in Barrett.
It was she.
Okay.
It was she and Dr. Ryan.
Oh, okay. Awesome. So what were some of the challenges with getting honors here at West? Like, what did you have to overcome to get this set up?
We had to think of a way, because it wasn't until 2001 that the West Campus enrolled its first freshman class.
Right.
So we were an upper division campus for a long time, but when I came in 94, until 2001. So we had to find a way to make sure that the special topics course in honors could be given, because you had to take one of those courses as part of your mm-hmm. graduation requirements. And that has since evolved, with some help of mine and some other faculty, into what is now called the History of Ideas Seminar.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of our problems. We needed to provide something like a space for
right.
honors students. We needed to develop special things for graduation so that we could honor them. And those were all things that more important to try to work out.
Mm-hmm. And starting all that for the first time.
Yes.
That's awesome. So, when did you really realize that this is where you needed to be? Like, this is the place for you?
Well, I had the great good fortune of being successful, if I could be so bold, as a graduate student, as a teacher. And my word of this got to the Honors College at Purdue, and they asked me if I would teach honors classes while I was a graduate student, which was quite a great gift for
That's
me.
Awesome.
And it was doing that for a number of years while I was earning my PhD that allowed me to have the kind of experience that when I asked to be appointed as the liaison, I was the one who had some background in honors education. So that made me very happy. And it was from that I realized I was really excited about honors, and it was giving me this other opportunity at my new institution. I wanted to impress people and be a contributing member of the campus, and I thought that was a way to do it, because the person who mentored me there, Dr. Clayton Lean, was very good, I thought, and he taught me enough about honors that I could use the vocabulary and talk intelligently with Dr. Young, and so that worked out well.
So, in talking about you being involved in honors and that being the place for you,
mm-hmm.
what does it mean to be an honors student? Like, what do you think it means to be in Barrett?
From the student perspective,
you could also start from the, you were talking about the difference between teaching honors and regular classes
hey.
And workforce
students. Well, I knew honors was for me because I was here at a campus where I had the kind of training the way most of my colleagues did, where we thought we were going to teach at institutions where we would have tons of PhD students and we were going to pursue our writing, my own philosophy, that I was going to do that with graduate students, and I didn't have graduate students, but I had a really good gig and I had honors students around, and that's one of the things that's been the greatest blessing of honors for me, is to know that maybe I can't teach the six ideas I want in an honor seminar as I could in a PhD seminar, but I can do two of them if I go at the right pace. It's why I thank honor students and honors classes and seminars in my acknowledgments to the things that I publish, because I teach the things I need to do to be the kind of philosopher I want. So that's one of the great things about honors for me, is it allows an undergraduate experience to keep me abreast of what's going on, and usually professors do that with PhD students, and I get to do it with advanced undergraduates.
Awesome. On that note, you serve as both a professor and a dean,
yes,
which is kind of magical. So what are some of the advantages of being both in a classroom and at the administrative level, working with students in both capacities?
Being a professor helps me be a dean because I never am allowed to forget what the first year class is like, what the students are like, what their concerns are, how things have changed in the over 20 years that I've been here. So I love that. It makes me think as a dean about what this next incoming group needs in their differences from fond memories that I have from classes past. So I like that quite a lot. I like not being addressed as dean in the classroom. I don't want to be the dean when I'm in the classroom. I want to be a professor and a philosopher and a thinker. So I ask students if they wouldn't mind not using that title in the classroom and go for professor or doctor, because I don't want that administrative thing hanging over the task that I've set by the books I've assigned and what I want to do. But I like how much insight it gives me when I come back to this office after teaching.
Absolutely.
I think I get that as well because I use my title to accept all kinds of invitations across campus. So I sling hash at the midnight breakfast, right? I go to almost every major event on campus to represent the college. I think that's important. I see students there. I see students pleased that myself and other honors faculty are there. And that helps me be the dean to realize that I don't just make administrative decisions or simply go to meetings, but I participate in the kind of life that a student has from. It's why I attend move-in, and it's why we're required to attend the medallion ceremony. I think from the first day to the last, I like being the dean.
Yeah, and we're very aware of your presence. Like,
oh,
it's
thank
notable
you.
That you are on campus all the time. So it's part of that, that students see you and you have a reputation for being a role model and changing lives, but how do you feel about that kind of perspective from students?
It's more responsibility than I know how to bear, so students are surprised that I get nervous, but I'm nervous all the time before I go to class, before closing night. I understand it's a responsibility. I also understand that the college takes on a kind of tone of the person who is in this office. I try to make it a tone that others can adopt and contribute to in terms of difference and not just imitating what we do, but I like the ethos that I'm trying to make here. I think the repetition of excellence is a kind of progress, so we do things that work again and again. I don't find that boring, I find that extraordinary. The new students make it different, but I think trying to do things that work is, and having some tradition and expectation are important things.
Where do you think, as being a dean and a professor, where do you think you have the most impact on students' lives?
I wouldn't know how to hierarchize it. I do different things different ways. So. I am hopeful it matters to honor students at the West Campus that the dean tries to know their name. I like to greet people when I see them on campus when I'm walking. They don't have to be in seminars that I teach. I like that. I'm hopeful they like that, I mean. Here's what I remember. When I was you, my favorite professor said hello to me on campus. It was a great day. It gave me confidence. When he or she would invite me to a certain kind of conversation during office hours, it was meaningful. When they listened and remembered to the kinds of things that were important to me. So I try to listen to students when I meet with them so that when I see them, I can ask, how's it going? Say something to you about Shakespeare, for example. I ask you if you really wanted the major that you came.
Absolutely. No, I did not.
And I thought I saw that.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. Changed the game for me.
Good.
Thank you. So, being at the West Campus specifically, I know you've had a lot of really impactful changes and you've directed a lot of programs, but what have you been most fond of? What are some of those programs that you feel like, I really did something, this is amazing, this is going to last?
They asked me to be the dean again. I stepped away to write another book
mm-hmm.
and was able to do that. And then when Andrew Kirby, who was the dean during the time I was away, so I was the dean from 01 to late in 04, yeah,
okay.
So 05. So I was 5 years and then started again in 2010. They asked me what it would take to get me to come back, and I said, well, I need all of the 2000 UCB 201. I need the entire suite.
Mm-hmm.
We were sharing the space with 4 or 5 other divisions. It was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
We made it work because we were welcoming and so on, but it wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
We had trouble recruiting students because we had nowhere to walk them through. And so Heron Faniff was instrumental with me in getting the plans for UCB 201, and we knocked down walls. And we so, and it was a wonderful collaboration because the new college, or the dean of the new college, and was also the vice provost of the campus and understood what Barrett meant to
mm-hmm.
the campus. She's the one who asked me what I needed. So she gave me all of the funds to remodel this entire space. She gave me the freedom to decide what that remodel would look like and didn't interfere. She thought we understood what we wanted, and Heron was really good at that, and she and I worked together. Then Mark Jacobs understood what it meant. So he gave me the budget to furnish this space. So if you're looking for funny anecdotes, then here's one. Goodman's Furniture came out, and I had a budget from Dean Jacobs, and they said, here's a catalog, you should choose the kind of furniture you want. And I said, but there are no prices here. They said, just choose what you like. So I chose what my taste wanted, and it was, I think, 5.5 times the budget. We had to change our taste.
They're like, you're like
a little bit. I still think we did all right taste-wise.
Mm-hmm.
We had a color palette. We were trying to do something. The furniture is now over 8 years old. It's held up well. We care for it. We tried to make each room unique. We tried to name the rooms.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted them to have a purpose. I think that makes it easier to tour students when you can say, oh, you're on a tour. This room is called Rosalind Franklin because that was a name that came from students. Young women scientists, I didn't know who Rosalind Franklin was, and I'm glad I do now. And those are the kinds of things that I think just add a little bit of touch
mm-hmm.
to what we tried to do here. So I thought that was a big deal. I think our classroom is a beautiful space.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's mural.
Oh, yes. Would you like to hear the mural story? I was told I could have that room, which had been dormant for quite some time,
mm-hmm.
and I said I would use Barrett funds to remodel it, but that I had to paint over the mural that was along the back wall. And they said, no, that's our only rule. You can have the room if you don't, but you have to leave the mural. It wasn't just my taste that thought so. It was the worst mural in the history of the world, and it had to go. So I finally kept saying, this won't do. It doesn't fit what the room has to do. It has to have a feel, it has to have an attitude in it, it has to be a place where when we enter, we know we're about to do, we're going to read good books and talk about them, and that mural doesn't say anything like that. So I made this concession, and I finally got them to say okay. So I had to leave some remnant of the mural. So I searched all of its images, and I found an owl,
mm-hmm.
and that seemed like Athena or Minerva. It seemed like wisdom, and it seemed like the fine concession. So I talked the painters into covering the owl. They painted the entire mural, and then they removed the blue tape, and there was the owl staring out at us. It's a good conversation piece. And we put, I thought, a nice passage from Plato along the back wall that I think captures what the human event and the history of ideas tries to do in there. So, I was asked for a little bit more money and was granted it because I wanted those chairs because I thought they were gorgeous,
mm-hmm.
and I think aesthetics matter. So we chose a certain kind of color for the carpet and the tables. Some of my colleagues were upset that the tables didn't have wheels, but that's exactly what I thought we needed, was a room that couldn't be rearranged because it should look like a seminar room all the time.
Mm-hmm.
If we need to move tables, we'll go to another room. So.
Absolutely. It belongs like
yeah.
that.
And the back of that chair, it pleases me every time I go in there.
That's great.
I had students test the chair. We had a version of it up here, and people came through and gave me their reviews. A popular review of the chair was, is this too much detail?
No, go for it.
Is it?
No, this is great. This is the kind of stuff we need. Yeah.
Is that it's just comfortable enough not to want to get out of, but not comfortable enough that you can slouch in it. And I thought, that's a seminar chair.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
relaxed. But
you have to
serious.
Sit up and take note. So
mm-hmm.
I thought they were the perfect chair. And you don't see students sitting like I am now in this chair. Right. You just can't do it in that chair. And I think that's a virtue of its design. And I like designers. I think they're smart people.
Mm-hmm.
They work hard at making good things. And so we honored them by trying to make the room beautiful.
Yeah, and it has an impact on the people. So
I'm hopeful.
It's important.
I think this, don't you think when students come, you must have been in seminars where students were recruiting come for to sit in on
mm-hmm.
a human event one day. I think they're impressed
and
by
it. And they get the little chair and they're like, wow,
yeah.
this is an experience with
yeah.
the room and the
yeah.
setup.
Yeah.
They always look very like, wow. I'm small. This is intense.
Yes.
So other details about West. We are very different from Poly and Tempe and downtown. So what are some specific?
We're very different from Tempe.
We're very different from everything.
Mm.
But what are some specific challenges that we had to face to be what we are now? Like some really big things we overcame.
Barrett at this campus suffered because the West campus suffered
mm-hmm.
when the president of the university was in a kind of press war with
mm-hmm.
legislatures, and he offhandedly said that, well, then we'll just close the West Campus.
Mm-hmm.
But it got a kind of traction in the press, so we dealt for years and years, and still to today, find this a problem that people don't know that Barrett is here. Some people still want to know when the campus is going to close. So those were real difficulties. The life of Barrett at the West Campus is tied to the life of the West Campus.
Mm-hmm.
So when the new college and the West Campus go well, Barrett does better. Barrett helps them, clearly, by bringing students like yourselves here. But we can only be as good as the reputation of the campus, it seems. We've helped that reputation greatly.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say from 08 to at least 13 or 14, maybe later, we suffered dearly for that
mm-hmm.
war of words that was taking place in the press. When people ask, this hurts, is it really Barrett at West?
Mm-hmm.
That crushes me because, as you know, we carry out the entire Barrett mission here.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the virtues of Dean Jacobs is to allow someone with the title of associate dean and then be called dean on that campus to make decisions that fit the campus
mm-hmm.
and not try to imitate what they do in Tempe so successfully because they do something at a kind of scale we can't. So we should do some things better, and there's probably things we can't do as well because you need a larger student body to do that.
Mm-hmm. And we've got our biggest freshman class. Like, we're growing, we're doing things well.
Our growth and our promise that we would be better if we had a full-time recruiter, and those arguments were understood in Tempe, and we were given a recruiter full-time, and she just gave me numbers for 26 students ahead of where we were this time last year when we admitted our largest class ever by a long shot. So.
This is actually a good place for me to jump in. It's Eric Oberle for the recording sake here, which is that one of the design goals of the whole university is embeddedness in the community. And maybe it'd be good if all of you just talked a little bit about how you feel West, the Westness, right, the embeddedness in the West community is important to your experience here. And just maybe all comment on it because I think that's also part of the function.
Ms. Lawrence?
Hello. I just love how it's not, I love small schools.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be in a small school because otherwise I'll feel so cloistered and unimportant and relatively tiny.
Isolated.
And it's like that, you're in a crowd, but wasn't it Gatsby? In Gatsby, how they said that even though you're amongst a whole bunch of people,
mm-hmm.
you can still be yes, it's Gatsby. Anyway, and
I love honor students.
And I never really had any friends in school, And so, but once I got to West, I finally had, I have, everybody's super nice. And I love how kind and compassionate everybody is. I love being able to not have to scurry to get to classes if need be. I love that I get to have one-on-one times with professors. I love that I get to, I love the smaller classrooms, and so I don't feel so closed off from everybody else and kind of claustrophobic at times. I think it's wonderful here, and I love the architecture mm-hmm. and just the feeling of it. I love all the trees.
Mm-hmm.
I love trees.
Yeah. It's a beautiful space. At the end of my freshman year, I told my mom that I don't think I would be as happy in college if I wasn't at West and at West Barrett,
mm-hmm.
because the community here is what I was looking for from college,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't have captured that at Tempe, because I want the one-on-one, and I want the time in the space where you run into someone and you get into a conversation about biology, and I know nothing about biology, and it's beautiful, and it's fun, and you get into debates, or you get out of class, and you follow the group, because they're still talking after the human event, and we've got more to say, and it's an incredible community that's small enough, and it's slower, in that you can just make your way through the day, and the breeze, and the lawns, like, it's gorgeous, and
I like the pace of the West Campus quite
yeah.
a lot. I think that's part of the ethos here.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Heron who first said, when I overheard her recruiting students, the campus is large enough that you'll pass someone you don't know, but small enough that it's unlikely you won't also pass someone you do know.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that a nice
yeah.
way to think about it? So it's not so small that it's like, oh God, not him again, right? But it's large enough that you can say, oh, who's that? Which is a fun thing to say sometimes from across the room.
Yeah, but Plato's Republic might have worked out if it had been more like that.
Yeah.
Right. There you go.
Good. I think another thing that I don't understand, and I've asked students about this, but I don't have a keen sense. I think we feel embedded in the campus, but not in the West surroundings, because I don't think we're a large enough campus yet to influence the kind of businesses that are around us. And that would be nice if there were a coffee shop
mm-hmm.
and a used bookstore. I think those things are on our horizon. So
yeah.
maybe that's something you'll ask me near the end. What do I see in the future? But that kind of integration of our campus into, yeah, I want us to build walking bridges over 43rd and over Thunderbird so that students can safely pass to those
mm-hmm.
places where they might be able to walk among those shops. But I want those shops to be ones they would be willing or wishing they could walk among, and we don't have that yet.
Mm-hmm. It's not a very college town, even though
it doesn't feel college towny around here, even though this feels to me like a college campus all the time,
mm-hmm.
a nice intimate one. So we try to make up for that. I think our First Friday things are interesting.
Yeah,
we haven't done this in a while, but it used to be a yearly thing. We had a Make Your Own Culture Day where students would show up in my home at 10 in the morning. We would write a quick script based on either a short story or an aphorism or something, a line from the symposium. Then we would send filming crews out while the rest of us stayed behind and prepared for the barbecue. Then the filmers would come back. They would give the film to the footage to the editors. They would edit while the rest of us did the barbecue. And then at midnight that night, we would premiere the film. So we'd make a film in one day. That was a lot of fun.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And those are lasting things, because
uh-huh.
when you spend a day making art, memories are made,
mm-hmm.
but also friendships. So it might be nice to talk to some alumni who are a part of those great films. And all of those films are archived by Liz Marini.
Okay.
And every once in a while I get, forgive me, maybe nostalgic, I don't know. But I ask if we can have an afternoon where we just run them all back to back.
That's very representative of the community, though. That's exactly who we are. We're very creative and we're very active, and that's awesome. Really enjoy that. In addition to hosting that at your home, I know you host Thanksgiving
yes.
as a tradition, which I've heard a lot about. I have not made it yet. I intend to next year.
Okay.
What is that about? What does it mean to you?
Well, that was something that a professor did for students, of whom I was one.
Oh.
And it was quite meaningful, and I thought, we all imitate the people we think have done things we like. So that was something I took over along with Dr. Gruber. So it started in 2000 and gone every year since then. It's probably not the best name, but we call it Orphan Thanksgiving. But we just mean those folks who are unable to get, whether through distance or some other reason, are unable to get to a Thanksgiving meal.
Mm-hmm.
So we make a number of turkeys and do all of the cooking. It's in recent years, it's been joined by the co-host of Sohini Roy and Dr. Michael Walker,
mm-hmm.
both Barrett West alumni. It's a wonderful day. About 6 o'clock, students who, for whatever reason, start showing up also for dessert. So we have between 10 and 30 for dinner, and then scores more for dessert. It's also become a place where Barrett West alumni know that they can meet if they're all in town. So that dessert also becomes a kind of alumni West reunion time. That's kind of nice.
Incredible.
I like watching the returning alumni talk with the current students.
Yeah.
Many of them are doing the very thing that the current student wishes to do. They're MDs or attorneys or some such thing. That's college professors. So I think that we're old enough now to have those kinds of successes
mm-hmm.
that I think inspire the first-year students who are there. Yeah. Or at least the current students. They're not all first-year students.
No, not all.
So I like that day.
Yeah, that's fun. I think it's really special, and that's also just really, that's so West Campus to do, and I really think that's beautiful. Just being that one-on-one with the professors and just everyone. It's really magical. Are there any events that we hold throughout the year that you really value, that you think are really special?
I know how special it is from the student report, the closing night.
Mm-hmm.
It's oddly the thing that I always ask the staff, do we really have to do this again? And they say absolutely. And every year I think they're right. I don't know why I keep asking. But I think it's a lovely evening. I think opening night is a nice way to be serious at the beginning. I'm a fan of our formal dance.
The bear ball. Yeah.
The bear ball. I think that's lovely. I was mistaken. I thought for the 10th anniversary the live band was going to be perfect, and it wasn't. So that's all right. We keep trying things, and then we edit. I like the parent bowl. I enjoy the opportunity to invite scholars from around the U.S. and the world, and I like giving Barrett students the opportunity then to dine with them either at a lunch or a dinner. I think it's important to be able to meet those kinds of people. Sometimes you don't know just who you've met until sometime later, but that's okay, because I think our students are trained well enough in various ways through being in a club with Liz or Susan or Sasha. I think it's just important to be around intellectuals and to remind ourselves that culture still thinks it's important that there be such a thing as intellectuals. And
yeah, and
they have a role to play.
I know that. For me especially, opening night was like emotional, and I didn't anticipate it to be. But I came back and I was like, oh, I'm returning to my home. Like, oh, I see.
Yeah, you're a part of something.
Back at this community,
yes,
where all my people are, and I can talk to people about
Was the most recent one your sophomore year?
Technically, yes.
Okay, so Dr. Murphy's talk was actually quite moving.
Yeah.
Yes, and the year before I thought Watrous was great. I think asking the faculty to say something reminds the students that we are in this together. This is something that we do. Yeah. Oh, I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah.
Good.
And having the Barrett faculty available all the time is really awesome, with staff here.
Yes.
And the growing
university officials want me to move the faculty out of the suites, but I resist, because that's part of the beauty of this very place.
Mm-hmm.
They're just mistaken. They don't quite understand, it seems to me, the pedagogical function of having Watrous's door open where you can talk with her at your
mm-hmm.
leisure.
Especially for human events students, I think, at that
don't
first
you think?
Level.
Yes.
And then, yeah, that's a stressful moment.
Yeah.
Coming out of that, I realized just how much we were reading and how much work that was, and I didn't realize. And then I'm going into non-honors classes, and I'm like, all right, moving on. So that was really special.
I once had a dream that this would be the non-textbook campus. It would be the text. It would be the primary text campus. Wouldn't that be glorious? You couldn't teach any class with a textbook. Maybe in the skills and sciences, but if you were teaching intro to sociology, you'd have to read Weber and Durkheim and whomever.
That would make more sense.
This is what people don't understand. They think the classics only belong, I don't know to whom. But there's classics
to the
in every, yeah,
to
the
dead.
Dead.
Yeah.
They belong to the living. That's why they're classics. But every discipline has its classics, and that's how you should introduce people. So I ask students often, what if every one of your intro classes was like the human event? Their eyes light up. They go, that would be better. We could have a psychology class like that. My, yes, professors can do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
So why did...
Oh, you can see.
Why do professors do that then?
Sometimes accidentally we
yeah.
all teach them something, right?
Yeah.
And we all think
Gosh.
Accidentally.
There's a passage from Michel Foucault that I sometimes cite about how you have to really work to make education seem dull and boring. And yet we do it, and
mm-hmm.
it's sinful. That passage, which I sometimes quote at length, has gotten me in trouble, by the way, yeah. because, yeah.
Is that the one where Foucault actually talks about the impossibility of teaching, too? Is it the same?
But he says if... should I go on record saying this?
We can edit it out. I mean,
he says, if you just let education be what it is, then it would be as pleasurable as sexuality, and that people would be crashing university doors trying to get in, that everyone would want to be here. But he thinks we make it boring so we can restrict the numbers of people that we have to take. And so I said that at a public meeting, and the then president of the Barrett Parents Association went to the microphone and said how inappropriate what I had just said was.
Well, the French
other parents
the
came
French
up to
an
me.
Expansive idea of
right,
pleasure. This
right.
is true.
It's true, right?
This is right.
But other parents came up to me afterwards
right.
and said, I understood. So I'm sticking
pretty
with
funny.
That. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to get you in trouble.
Yeah, too bad. I stand by the claim. I think it's right.
Well,
because think about the symposium. It's about love, but it's also about learning.
Mm-hmm.
And if there isn't kind of something, if you can't love to learn, then yeah, it's why I don't teach chronologically in the human event. I think you have to start with loving learning. So I start with symposium and then go somewhere else.
It's the first symposium.
It is. Why not?
One of the things, if I may just kind of say, the one thing I found really great about this conversation, I just would love to have all of you comment on. I was really struck by Dean Ramsey talking about the possibility of that nervousness was important to teaching, and the kind of fear. And it would be interesting to know whether that nervousness is fear of failure or whether it's related to the possibility of learning, as kind of I think you were maybe just suggesting. And I was really struck by what Phoebe said about the being surprised that you were emotional at opening night when you're talking about the purpose of being here. And I think maybe you could talk first, Phoebe. Or I don't know. I don't want to script it too much. But, I mean, one of the things that's interesting is those were really interesting surprises that I think go to the heart of in many ways, what we're trying to do here. And maybe you could expand on why were you surprised, or why did nervousness come to mind as a sort of caught up with the enterprise of all?
Well, I think initially when I was thinking, oh, okay, I have to go to opening night, it's this very like, I have to go, I have to get dressed up, I have to show up, I have to see these people, whatever. I don't like going out. And so I get there and I'm like, oh, my friends, like, oh my gosh, and it's touching. And I'm like, whatever, I'm still too cool for this, whatever. I don't know. And then I'm there and I'm listening to you speak and I'm like, you're right, this is who we are, this is what I want to be. I am stressed about this ending because I don't know what the next chapter looks like. And I know that this is going to impact who I am and, like, the attitude that I come at life with. And so it's very difficult to, like, realize this is year two. I have one more and then I'm out. So I need to cherish this. I need to experience this fully. And so it's that emotional, like, concept of I'm returning home and I'm coming back to this place that's safe and welcoming and beautiful. And so I just expect it. I'm showing up to this event I have to do to go to my school. Because education doesn't always have this sensation, and I've always loved learning, but an institutionalized education doesn't always mean that I am enjoying learning.
It's more evidence from Foucault, right?
Yeah,
there.
It's beautiful, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
gorgeous.
Because what you just said, right? I mean, you had an it there that I was trying to track, but you meant the fear of education ending,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's what makes you emotional, right?
A little bit, yeah. And it's this welcome back home, and then where do I keep learning on my own in my future where I need to be working to live?
Right, but the part that makes you happy is the fact that you kind of know that education isn't going to end,
mm-hmm.
right? It's that you've been prepared to continue.
Yeah, and Barrett prepares you to kind of not do your own research, but keep investigating and keep reading and keep learning and realizing as part of the human event, there's these books I would never pick up, The City of Ladies, ever. I have no interest. And here I am like, yeah, and this other thing, and I've got hard opinions about things, and I'm coming into it, and I'm interested. And so then I go out in the world, and I learn something in the news, and then I look into it further instead of just accepting things. And so it's taught me how to live a little bit differently and think differently and look into stuff. And I really think that's of value to me and hope to other Barrett students. I feel like that's a big part of being a Barrett student is learning how to see the world a little differently. So that's important to me.
It's not just a valuable thing. It's maybe the most valuable thing.
Well, I really love last opening night, I had the big responsibility of being a Barrett mentor,
mm-hmm.
and I had to talk in front of all these freshmen and give them advice, and I remember staying up quite a bit late the night before, just going through, like, what can I tell them, what can I tell them, what can I tell them, and none of that really mattered. Ultimately, they just wanted to know that they were going to be okay, and that they're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to be challenging, but a good kind of challenging. They're going to have a whole brand new experience that they're never going to ever have ever again, or previously had. And it sort of was kind of like a dragonfly in amber. It sort of cements what Barrett is, and it keeps track of what we're trying to do, as well as reflecting on what we've done in the past. And it all sort of coagulates to this really beautiful experience.
That's nice. I think you're mentoring the thing that Liz does with all the mentors and is important because I think students expect people with my title to say the kinds of things I say. But they think students don't have to say that. I think you add a sense of legitimation to what we say, and that I couldn't be more grateful for that. And you say things we can't say. For all the things I do know, I don't know exactly what it's like to be a Barrett first year student. I get nervous because I really, to keep myself, I've gone to talks not nervous and been terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I need to remind myself that there's a responsibility here. You can't just, yeah. So I promise myself many things. I will never go to a human event class without rereading that week the thing that I've assigned, mm-hmm. even if I've read it a gazillion times. It's not the first time for me teaching symposium, but it's the first time for that class. And they deserve a professor at his or her best.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways to do that isn't to pretend you know what the text says, because you probably don't, again. Yeah. I taught a really difficult book last semester. It was a seminar where we read just one book because it was so challenging. And it was the seventh time at Barrett that I taught that book. And I was embarrassed about 4 weeks into class thinking, I wasn't qualified to teach it the first six times. I really kind of get something about it now. But I remember kind of feeling that way the other times too.
I love that every kind of Socratic conversation about a book experiences it so differently. And if you've talked about a book a million times, you go and you talk to someone else and they say something that you're at first like, no, and then you're like, wait, keep going,
yes.
Tell me more.
Yeah.
That sounds crazy, keep going,
yes.
I want to hear about this. What do you think this is? So.
Maybe Penelope knows sooner than we think. Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Those are lovely moments.
Absolutely.
They really are.
I always feel outraged when people are like, I don't know that Barrett is for me. Or like, I'm a sophomore and I think I'm just going to drop it and keep going. I'm like, how? What are you seeing? How do you not see what I'm seeing? Like, I can't conceive of not feeling this way. And I can't conceive of not being part of this. Like, that's blown my mind.
The comment that makes me smile, though I try to hide it, is when a student will say, well, I've already read that in IB or something. I go, yeah, well, just wait.
That's right.
Because, as I say, and you've probably heard me say, there's a kind of infinite distance between high school and university, and it's hard to know. It's an infinite distance, and yet somehow it can be bridged. But students almost have to experience it before they will believe you, because the way of trying to tell them doesn't quite convey to them. But maybe that's where the student experience, when prospective students talk with the current students. Maybe that's what helps most.
It's hard to put in words.
It is.
Like, explaining. When I spent this semester working in the Writing Center, I was talking to students who were working on their human event essays, and I'm like, well, it's going to be completely different for you, and I can help you with your ideas if you talk to me, but I wasn't in that class. I don't know how this conversation went. Yes, I read this book, but you're experiencing it differently. Like, I don't know how to help you with that. You need to think this through, and I think one of the hardest parts at the beginning is them developing their own ideas and understanding that they have a voice in the conversation.
Yes.
And getting into that, because in high school it's a completely different way of learning. But I don't think I've ever felt so truly challenged until I did the human event. Like, that really met my abilities in a fair way that I really had never achieved before, and that was really magical.
Yeah, because the 5-paragraph essay is not going to do it.
No, it is not.
No. You're working in the Writing Center reminds me, maybe that is something else that I've liked that Barrett has done here, and it did it by necessity, but I think we made a virtue out of it, is we can't have our own Writing Center, and we can't have our own call lab, and we can't have our own change maker space, but I think we place students in those places.
Yeah.
I think the fee that I pay to the call lab is important, that Barrett West pays to the call lab is important, because the campus is the size where we need to take advantage of what's best of the campus. It's small enough that Barrett still feels like they belong. You don't have to wait online long to get those things. Do you work in the call lab as well?
No, I think I was invited last session, but Elizabeth Livingston does.
Yes. Are you a call lab person? No. But I think that's important. So that integration, I think, is essential to what we do.
And that's special to West. And the majority of the Writing Center is Barrett.
Yes.
Even, like, into the, like, front desk. Like, it's the majority of the team. So that's really magical. And I think that has a big impact on the rest of the student body, getting to work with Barrett students.
Mm-hmm. No, that's what I think the college has to do, is make sure that it's not so insular that it doesn't give back to the campus, and that's one way.
Mm-hmm.
I think we do it by having Barrett lead non-Barrett student groups.
Mm-hmm.
They're usually the class president on campus, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Those things are important.
And I think it's also really cool that, I mean, the compound at Barrett at Tempe is really magical and, like, a beautiful place to experience.
It's gorgeous.
But I think it's completely different that we don't have our own isolated space beyond the Barrett Suite.
Mm-hmm.
We go out and we're with everyone, and we're in classes, and we're, like, interacting. Even in the dorms during first year, we're doing human event essays in one of the, like, common rooms with normal students around us, and we're, like, freaking out at midnight with everybody as a normal person.
Right.
So, yeah, it has a completely different feel. Like, you feel different, but not any separated.
That's good.
And so it's kind of that special, like, we're still with everyone else.
It's humanizing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's lovely.
It kind of keeps us grounded a little bit, I think.
And it helps dispel some of the misconceptions about honors education.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't understand what it means.
Some of my favorite things are when Barrett students are dating non-Barrett students, and then the non-Barrett student says, I think I want to be in the college.
Yeah.
Right? Because they bring them to events and so on. That's a pretty cool gig.
Yeah.
I might want to do that. So I think we're going to get 3 of those in the current of applications. I think that's lovely. That's a cool way to recruit.
Yeah. We have a lot of students that don't really get what it means, and I'm like, why aren't you in Barrett? Like, I've met you, the way you work, the way you approach education, you belong here. And they're like, what's a Barrett? Okay, I'll take this. Tell me more.
Cool.
I'm excited about that.
My own apprehension about speaking and teaching reminds me that you asked earlier, I thought, about some challenges of being the dean, and that's one of the challenges, is I think many students who come to Barrett at the West Campus, despite the decision of the admissions committee, wonder if they belong. And their nervousness isn't a good kind of nervous. The kind of apprehension and excitement I have before I go teach isn't the kind of stress they're under one that I think is more damaging. And I think that's an important role that the dean can play in many ways, by also having mentors who assure them and all kinds of other ways, is to say, yes, you belong, which doesn't mean it isn't challenging. If you're challenged, that doesn't mean you don't belong. That's not the marker. And I think sometimes they treat things as evidence for not belonging that isn't. It's just part of what it means to do the challenging work of reading a primary text, writing about it intelligently. Those things are difficult for all of us. So that is another thing that I want us to be here to be really keen to notice and work in various ways
mm-hmm.
to overcome that. This shouldn't be a stressful thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's hard because not every honor student is necessarily good in areas of writing and communicating, and so they walk into this very philosophical class and they're like, I can do math real good. What are you talking to me about Plato for?
Yes.
Like, and so that can be really hard, and they're like, I don't know what I'm saying, and there's three kids that are talking because they're into it. And so I think that's a really cool space for them to kind of figure it out and find that time. But I very distinctly remember, I think Dr. Gruber talking to a group of us and saying, you're here, we picked you.
Yes.
You're here, we picked you. And we're like, okay, like maybe, perhaps. But yeah, it's a very stressful, like, you're setting your own expectations, and the college isn't saying you're not doing enough, but you're feeling it. And so it's kind of overcoming that that makes you find your place here. I think that's part of figuring out if this is new.
That's really good. This has worked so far, so I'm going to try this one more time. So one of the things I hear kind of connected in an interesting way here is a relationship between peer mentoring.
Yes.
And I mean, maybe, Dr. Ramsey, you could talk a little bit about the history of peer mentoring, and probably this is a process of discovering this is a useful thing for this campus. But maybe you, Phoebe, and Maggie could talk about how that's been important for you and how it's important for you to kind of, like, the other thing I think kind of I hear connected to peer mentoring is this question of, am I in this community? And how do you kind of recognize that you're in it and become part of this idea that it's a contagious feeling of being enthusiastic about it through your peers as well as your teachers? And so maybe talk a little bit about how peer mentoring and feeling like you're part of something is also part of kind of the startup feel that's still part of West Campus. Because I think
that's
all
a
part of
question.
The history here.
It's a great question in many senses, but it also reminds us that this charge to carry out the Barrett mission with a little bit of autonomy is important, because Dean Herman had already had mentoring forever, right, and was running this incredibly successful thing in Tempe. We realized we needed it, but we needed to do our version of it, and I think that our version of it is probably what you're going to hear at downtown and at Polytechnic, right? It's Barrett allowed to do our version of it. So Liz Marini has done an extraordinary job, I think, of being the staff advisor to that. Because she trains the mentors and professionalizes them. You go through a lot of work to be a mentor,
mm-hmm.
and it's a wholly volunteer.
Yeah.
Yes. But there are weekends set aside where they're with one another and do all kinds of team building exercises and because we want the mentor not to just be someone who wants to do it, but has been trained to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important. And we link that then with the Barrett student request of the dean, that they didn't want to do ASU 101 anymore. They wanted a Barrett version of ASU 101. So we do that on our campus. And we allow the mentors a place in that class 2 and 3 times a semester, as I recall. Yes. And I think that helps quite a lot.
Great. So I want to hear you two talk about that. So you're both a mentor? So
no.
Are you? No. Okay.
But
so
you were mentored.
But you can talk about it.
Right.
You were mentored, right? Yeah.
Would you like to go first?
Go for it, from the experience of a mentor.
I personally love the mentoring program. It's probably the best decision I've made at college, because it's taught me how to socialize, and it's taught me, every mentor is my friend, and we're so close, and this team that we've built is going to go on past the mentoring program. We're going to meet up next semester and every month and reconnect. But it's forced me out of my shell, because I've actually have to go up and talk to people, which I was never really comfortable doing. And so I remember going to the MIM and seeing, trying really hard to go up and talk to people, but not really having the courage to do it. But now I can go up to a freshman and start introduce them to the suite and introduce them to the people who work here and hang around here. And I love being able to connect with the freshmen, and I love being able to connect with other Barrett mentors, because we have a lot more in common than we initially realized. And I think it's a really great way to humanize everybody.
Your MIM event is one of the first things you did as a mentor, right?
Yes.
And then one of the last thing you did was get on stage and do a mashup for lip sync.
Yes.
That's a long way from not wanting to talk to anyone.
I think from my own experience, the mentors were people that I spotted all the time. And so those are the students that I see the most around the suite and mm-hmm. out and about. And I'm like, they're the most involved students, just generally. And I don't know if that is a product or whatnot, but it was really significant because I was able to pick up on names of those people, and then I had people to talk to freshman year that I could, like, spot. And it's that idea of walking around West. I recognize a lot of faces. I have a lot of classes, but maybe I don't know everyone's name, but I know the mentors,
okay.
and they give me a wave, and that's a moment when you're a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
And just feeling like, oh, this is my foot in the door of this community, is to meet this person that will have a conversation with me first. Because a lot of the freshmen didn't really talk to each other even. So we're like scared, and we're like, I don't know who you are, and you can't really tell who the freshmen are. And it's just really magical to have that connection immediately. And they tell you, oh yeah, this teacher and that teacher and this human event, and it's gonna be hard, and you just have to do it and fine, and just continue, and you're gonna enjoy it, or maybe not. I don't know. If you're talking to someone that's a science major, they're probably like, it sucks, and you're like, no, tell me more.
Wait till you get to Lucretius.
Yeah.
That's what I tell.
But it's interesting because that's the most real talk you can have about Barrett when you first get in, is when you're talking to a mentor, because everyone else is very formal, and like meeting you, you're not going to say, so what's the scoop? Tell me more. But when you get those mentors kind of out of the way of all the adults, and you're kind of like, what's the truth? Tell me what we're into, because I don't really understand what this is yet. And so that's kind of the behind the scenes little peek into this is what it's going to be like. And
that's a nice insight. How did you find the courage to start hanging out in the suite? I know freshmen sometimes feel as if the spots have already been claimed or something. And
yeah. There's a little bit of an attitude of, like, you walk into a space and someone walks in and sees you and leaves because they don't want to, like, take up your space. But I enjoy working in a public space where there's a kind of, not, like, straight conversation to me, but kind of ambient
yes.
noises happening. And so that really works for my type of skills. And so it was nice to be able to come here and have people around and, like, hey, Sasha, hey, what's up? Just checking in with a bunch of people and be able to pass people you recognize. But I think getting over intimidation was kind of just getting to know people. And I don't know that I really got into that until the end of freshman year, the beginning of this year. But it's kind of just a matter of figuring out, this is my thing that I'm a part of. This is my space.
Yeah.
And it's not just
nice.
Something that's exclusive for me. And I think that's something maybe needs to be directly said to the freshmen, because it's kind of hard to.
And you use Borges mostly, don't you?
Yeah, in the morning, absolutely. Yeah.
And you use Whitman. Were I a student, I always think I would be in Kurosawa. That would be the room I would be in. And there are students in there too.
Yeah.
There are types in different places. I like that. One of the things that I'm really moved by is hearing you talk, and I was trying to be mindful of it. But you can't have a conversation about what we think goes well at Barrett West without, we've mentioned every staff name numerous times,
mm-hmm.
right? So what Sasha does with the BRC and what Liz does with mentors and advising and so on and so on. And now that Hannah's been promoted, I think her role as an advisor is going to be great. But she was extraordinary at the front, greeting
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she made it a welcoming place,
yeah.
and I know that our new person there, Sohini, will do that. I've said in public more than once, so I'm happy to go on the oral history record of saying the staff here at Barrett West is extraordinarily good, and a lot of their great work gets attributed to me, and I don't want to pretend that I don't know that. I understand that. Yeah.
They're incredible. And developing individual relationships with all of them
yeah.
as a student, like bonding with Sasha over art and Harry Potter, and
yeah.
she was like, hey, have you heard of this new watercolor? And I'm like, how do you know that? You deal with a million students. And Susan with her dresses all the time. She's fun and exciting, and there's really great energy around here.
Yeah.
And I think they all have a completely different personality that we pick up on,
mm-hmm.
which is cool because they're the staff. Like, we need to respect them, and like, they're a certain status in this
yes.
experience, but it's very, very different, I think. And I really appreciate it. It's cool. Well,
I like college.
It's like a second home.
Yes, I like college
yes.
quite a lot.
I'm worried about that. So, the future of Barrett.
It's impossible because we know what the future has to be to do what the university wants to do, which is to become larger.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that part of what we like about this is this size. So I think we have to put the kinds of things in place that habituate this ethos that we have, and be very careful when it starts to slip to say, how can we have it back, even though we have now 125 new first-year students and not. So we went from 40, 47, we used to make those kind of incremental, right? Then we went to 63, then we went to 71, then we went to 97, and we expect 115 or more next fall. So those, that changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
More advising, more people in the Barrett residential life, but that makes Sasha's job more difficult, makes the CA's job, et cetera, et cetera. So the future is... I'm glad we're having this conversation. It's almost like a focus group for me to think about the future. How do we keep the ethos and invite more people to join us? Because we do want more voices. We do want more people. I really do think that this is the way to come to the West Campus, is to be in Barrett.
Mm-hmm.
The thing we can't say out loud, but is confirmed, I think, at least by your experience and what I watch happen all the time. For as challenging as the human event is, et cetera, it's easier to be in Barrett than not, because you have a built-in community, you have people caring about you. Those are the things that retain students.
Mm-hmm. Very direct resources.
Yeah. And we take you seriously as people who have
mm-hmm.
ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the best thing about the human event, is that you couldn't tell your professor what she wanted to hear because you don't know what it is, right? The class isn't like that,
there's
right?
There's no way to go about it.
There isn't. You can't just please them, right? I love that. I love that about the human event.
Yeah.
So... And I say to students, I'm your ally until you turn your paper in. I'll help you write the essay you want. But after that, then I can't, right? I have to be someone else.
Mm-hmm.
The way the university is set up, I have to be someone who then evaluates. But I'm your ally trying to write whatever crazy thesis you want.
Yeah.
I like that I've directed a handful of honors thesis with which I don't agree. I think that's really important. And I told students from the start, I don't think you're going to be able to persuade me, but here's how you would do it, if right? Here's the best way to make your terrible argument. No. Here's the best way to try to make your side of the case. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's
wrong,
something like
interesting is a goal.
And I'm sure with one now Dr. Kitchen, and we still have a wonderful disagreement about her thesis. That's something that Barrett should pride itself on, is that kind of... Because that isn't tolerance in a cheap sense. It's intellectual engagement where the issue's so complicated
mm-hmm.
that there are arguments all around. Yeah, and she made a good one. It just didn't persuade me. But she should say the same, that I made an okay rejoinder, but she remains unmoved too. So I think that's fair. That's a good standoff on that question.
You've talked a little bit about how proud you are of the ethos we've maintained, but
mm-hmm.
if you could see it evolve in any way, what would you want it to be in the most ideal sense? Kind of challenging.
That's a challenging question. To know it's so far from perfect, but not know exactly what I would change is a damning insight on your part. Okay. Touché. Can I say damning insight?
You can.
Okay.
I'm gonna let you think about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll throw something in as an observation.
Please.
I get the rule here. I'm just an outside observer, but I mean, this has been a wonderful conversation about what it means to be a lifelong learner. And, you know, one of the things I think that's really interesting, and again, I think that all of you are bringing out, is that there's something about being maybe an American that resists going all in to a kind of intellectual discussion. And one of the things I see often is that one of the things that's really important for Barrett is that it tells other students, it's okay to be intense and serious.
Yeah.
Right, you're all nodding about that, like almost instantly, like it's like a relief to say that. And I guess I don't know how that can evolve, but at least in terms of one of the things that you brought up, Dean Ramsey, was like relation to the larger community,
yes.
Right? I mean, how can Barrett play a role in helping Americans or Arizonans be serious about their intellectuality or about their mission or about their relations to each other, more articulate, more civil, right? Because those things, I think, are really central. And I mean, I don't know if you feel like you're a better citizen as part of being in Barrett, or if it's more like a club, but maybe to think about the civic side of it would be a nice way to end the discussion. How does this prepare you for being an American or a citizen in a broader way?
I do feel like I kind of orient myself to the world in a way that is kind of more European and artistic and maybe not what is purely American, and so it is very strange for me to align that. I've always kind of felt like I am really into a lot more of the education and art and whatnot that's happening in Europe than what's in America. But I think as far as just being more willing to be open-minded and investigative of what's happening, I think that would make me a better citizen just by result. But I can't say that I am more blindly supportive of things that are happening in America. Like, I feel like that makes me a more challenging citizen than anything else.
Critical citizen.
Perhaps,
yeah.
Engaged, yeah. So I don't think I'm necessarily better or worse.
Well, in terms, I love how Barrett supports and encourages and stimulates critical thinking, because that's what my parents have always brought me up to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love how everything that we read in Human Events kind of, even though they come from traditionally viewed as drastically different, juxtaposing studies, like Lucretius, and then we'll get to Freud, and then... But it's amazing how much these authors have in common in terms of... Well, you wouldn't even begin to think of at the very beginning. And then you can apply these, like, we're not all completely different. We have so much more in common than most people think. Like, one of my favorite things to do is think about all the ways that chemistry and Shakespeare have in common. Because they're surprisingly similar. But I just love reaching out and thinking of all the different ways we connect, because that humanizes these studies. And then we can further those, and we can talk to people that we would have never thought about talking to. So like a computer science major could talk to a communications major and realize that we love the same TV shows and we love the same books and the same everything. And then we can talk to people of different majors and different walks of life and get to know them better and feel like we can really commence a really wonderful relationship.
You both must have been in the 191 where we read the little section on what it means to be addicted to study. And
yes.
I am.
I'm sorry?
And I am.
No, it's a strange little, it's powerful little piece for being so short.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That kind of blew my mind, especially as one of the first things that we were doing.
Yeah, I always wonder if that's too soon.
That kind of opened up like, oh, that's who I was in high school.
Okay.
I understand how I go through life.
Okay.
Yeah. Critical or not. But yeah.
And it leads to that moralistic discussion too, because people don't like the word addiction. But that's the power of its use in the piece, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is to try to be a provocation.
Mm-hmm. It's shocking and intense.
Oh, this is awful. I don't know what I want to add to the ethos.
What about the attitude of the community?
Towards us? I think we're more or less welcomed, more or less, most of the time. We're asked to participate often. I like that we do that. I think we share. Compared to some other things, we have an embarrassment of riches, and we don't hoard them.
I think that they don't understand it well. And I think that we aren't transparently out on a stage, but that's not where we want to be necessarily. And so I think it's hard for them to understand what we do because we don't tell everyone.
In term, terms of books and so on, I think we do a nice, at least we're trying to be conscientious about diversity in our reading list and those kinds of things. I think in terms of gender and sexual orientation, etc., we're doing a nice job on the faculty. Clearly, if we had a person of color on the faculty, that would add another kind of moment to all of this that would be important. I know the college changed and we hired women on the faculty. I mean, we had no faculty, and that, so I just watching people at the office hour lines, and but not for human event questions, but for what it means to be a college student question. When you see successful women in the positions that you might want to be in, that's important. Despite not having a really good answer to your question, which I will take up in my own thinking, I promise you, what I do think is important is that I think the ethos is one that's responsive, and that helps it. So when it really comes up what we need to do, I think we're going to be able to hear it,
mm-hmm.
even if I don't know what that is right now.
And the nature of BART students is questioning, so we're not going to let anything go.
People come to my office and make reasonable, interesting requests, and we try to respond to them, right? It's how you know. I don't like guessing what students want.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather know what they think they want.
We're willing to tell you.
Yes, and we have the kinds of things in place to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have coffee talks with the dean. We have those moments where we survey the students and then have that meeting at the end of the year where students can ask questions of the staff and myself. So I would say the only virtue of my inability to answer is that I do think we're in a position to be responsive when we hear what it is the next move has to be.
We're open.
Yeah, we're open to that.
Do you have any other things you'd like to mention before we close?
I don't want it to end, because who gets to talk this way about what we do with this kind of intensity? I was flattered to be asked. I do want to say some things for the oral history part. I do think we have to find Julie's last name. We have to talk to Dr. Joseph Ryan. We have to think about those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
I also should say,
when I complimented the staff, which is also the staff who are not Heron Faniff, here's a nice anecdote. We had the layout of the suite as it looked before it was the suite. For the record, I'm bringing now a diagram of the suite.
Can I take a photo of that when we're done?
You can do. Before it looked like this, it looked like the way it did, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is how you come in. And there was a huge conference room here. So Whitman is knocking down all of those walls and so on. But Heron had, I don't know how it's called, but it's an erase, a white tape marker.
Uh-huh.
And every time she would do that, it was thousands of dollars. It was a wall coming down, but every time we moved that pen, we knew that we were cutting into the budget under which we had to work.
That's funny.
But we thought about what it meant to sit here, not to look into a conference room, which...
Uh-huh.
bars you,
mm-hmm.
but you're a prospective student sitting here waiting for your tour.
Yeah.
You look out across Whitman, and now you're sitting there reading As You Like It. You see the goings on of the college, and it feels like it's a place that's welcoming you. So our first move was to take down walls and try to make that space open.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of idea of openness is
welcome.
Well, and we called it Whitman,
mm-hmm.
the poet of democracy.
That's right.
I mean, this was easy. Borges was a librarian. But still, I thought Whitman wasn't a bad choice.
No.
And then we tried to cite his poem, The Open Road, to make it the Whitman open space. And I thought this poem was great, calling Freud the storage closet, everything we didn't know what to do with. We just
Freud
stuffed
is
in
a good
Freud.
Name for a closet.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
This is the name that students gave to that room. So
okay.
It's nice.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
The Rosalind Franklin
yes,
room for those
yeah.
listening on audio, right?
Oh,
right,
sorry.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
So, did you get your photo?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, I think one of the things maybe to comment there is that one of the things that you're underscoring, all of you underscored, is the importance of having the community of Barrett have a space that reflects the idea of community
mm-hmm.
and openness and sharing, right? Is that?
And you've heard that it's been a struggle to get similar spaces elsewhere because the university almost feels as if they made a mistake giving us this space. But I couldn't imagine this enterprise working in a certain way without it, right? It wouldn't be. And so when they give me these ideas that of how I should redesign the space, I don't think they've thought all the way through everything that it does. I think John Dewey calls this collateral learning, right? It's the learning that happens in, I mean, there's a pedagogical setting
right.
to everything that happens here.
Well, learning is always
even
a dialogue, and you learn, I mean, I teach these things too, and one of the things I always tell the students is that I don't know what you don't know, and you have to teach me what you don't know so that you can get some of the things that I do know. And in the process, I will learn something too as well. And it's always a dialogue. And it's true for institutions as well as for classrooms, right?
I think the structure of the suite is really integral to the way the community operates. And every space is really purposeful. And so even the one that has like a blanket and couches and beautiful window space, like that is a different environment to go into. And so if you're doing like any kind of educational work, it's really important to be able to change your environment so drastically. Like every room feels different and it has different levels of social like exposure or comfort or darkness, like whatever you need. And
mm-hmm.
I feel like the suite is so perfect for everything you've ever had to do, and you can like transform it to have a talk and
yes.
transform it to have a press conference, like whatever
mm-hmm.
needs to happen. And I think it's really important to how the community feels from the student's perspective.
There is a kind of disposition that ends up in the corner office with the windows, and a disposition that ends up in Kurosawa,
mm-hmm.
which is so poorly lit from the perspective of the corner office.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's perfect in Kurosawa.
Finding people in the beanbags is always a surprise.
I wish there was a rule against that, but
that is always shocking.
I didn't need science to tell me that naps were good, but there is research out now that tells us naps are good.
They always say you learn in your sleep, and you learn to skate in the summer.
I've seen, you know, napping take place in Rosalind Franklin and
mm-hmm.
in Kurosawa, and I think that's a legitimate thing to do.
I'm worried about there being plenty of space as we continue to grow, though. The space makes so much sense for where
mm-hmm.
we're at, but capacity is going to change.
I'm committed not to moving,
mm-hmm.
Unless I'm mistaken and I can be talked out of it. I'm committed not to moving until we have enough space to make a larger version of this that tries to at least reproduce those different kinds of dispositions, the different way in which a Whitman-like space could be used three different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to move just to a bigger space if it couldn't be partitioned in a way that allows it multiple use.
Mm-hmm.
But that's our next big thing.
Yeah.
So my real wish isn't for a radically different ethos, but a radically wealthy donor who wants to build the honors building
mm-hmm.
that we design with student input and try to get this to scale. I would love that.
Mm-hmm.
That would be fun.
Absolutely.
We had too few students for the size of the suite when it was built, but I promised them that we would bring the students would get, we could persuade people to come if we had something
okay.
they want to which they wanted to come. And it turned out to be right.
So you have to fight that fight again.
Yes, but now in the millions of dollars rather than in the tens of thousands. And that's a different conversation and a radically different fight, I understand. And I would say that I don't know how to be good at the second one. But that's what foundation people do, right? That's
well, yeah, and I mean, I think that one of the things that is interesting, right, is that ASU is this, you know, Phoenix is now, what, the sixth largest metropolitan
yes.
area in the United States. And ASU is the educational institution. Well, it's not the,
mm-hmm.
but it's the, not just dominant, it's not strong enough, it's the core educational institution in the city that is the sixth largest city in the country, and there's really nothing that compares. And I think if you think of educational institutes as being a little bit like institutions as being a little bit like acorns that have to have a kernel that's vital that makes them grow. I mean, I think Barrett is the kernel of how these institutions can grow because they provide the kind of intensity and educational, how would you say, not just educational experience, but the experience of an experience, the kind of sense that crystallizes into something that sustains you later. I mean, I do think it's really important, and it's hard to kind of, how would you say, it's very hard to think about history while you're living in it, but you have to. Right, and I think that's kind of what we're doing here.
Yes.
I mean, this is a lovely conversation because one of the things that is truly important is that you have to think about education while you're in it, right? And I mean, I was very struck by what Phoebe said about the kind of being surprised by that. It's important to learn to be surprised by that, always over again.
I like that you were defensive, and then you just. It happened, so you accepted it.
Yeah.
That's a nice part of that story.
Yeah, we'll just come in and like, yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah.
Well, I think we should turn it off and
absolutely.
Thank everybody. I'll just thank everybody. I don't have the official role of thing, but I feel privileged to have just even participated in this discussion.
Thank you, Dean Ramsey, for your participation. If you have any more thoughts to share later, please feel free to reach out. And if you have any questions about the interview or the 30th Anniversary Oral History Project, please contact Vice Dean Nicola Foot.